Hi, this is Craig Valentine, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show. We all make mistakes in life, and some are bigger than others. Now imagine you made a wrong turn in your life that led you down the road to a 7-year prison sentence. What would that do to you? How would you change? Would you plummet into the depths of despair, or would you dig deep like the man who I interviewed today did and find a way to transform adversity into advantage? What you're about to hear is the remarkable story of my friend and coaching client, Rob Gruppe, who admittedly he made a big mistake and he went to prison to pay his dues. But since then, he has gone on to do absolutely amazing things, and he teaches me something every single week in his coaching and accountability email updates back to me. And he has an incredible journey that you absolutely must hear, because he also has an amazing outlook on life that we should all incorporate ourselves. So you got to hear this story. My name's Craig Valentine, and all of this will be revealed on this powerful episode of Early to Rise Radio, which is brought to you by my new book, Unstoppable, and my first game-changing book, The Perfect Day Formula, about how to own your day and control your life. Rob has actually bought hundreds of copies of these books for his clients, because once he got out of jail, he started changing other people's lives. So grab your copy at freeperfectdaybook.com so that you can improve every area of your life, just like Rob.
Hey, this is Craig Valentine. I am here with my friend Rob Gruppe, a gym owner, not a groupie, but a gym owner down in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Rob, welcome to Early to Rise Podcast.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate you having me on.
We have known each other for years and years and years, and you have had an incredible transformation and journey in your life, man. One that involved, you know, going to prison, one that involved some lows of the lows, but you have fought through them in a way that I have never met a person fight through their struggles. But before we go there, my man, tell us where you are today, because you are one of the most successful, not just gym owners that I know, but business owners, and especially with your mindset towards constant and never-ending improvement. I would just love for you to share where you're at right now.
So we have a facility here in Oklahoma City that's about 16,000 square feet. It's called Twice Bitten CrossFit, and we currently have about 400 clients and have a really amazing team. And we're all just like getting better all the time. So one of our goals, like one of my goals, is to really make an impact here, you know, in my city, just make a difference, period. So, yeah, we have probably the biggest CrossFit gym in Oklahoma, one of the biggest in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, it wasn't obviously an overnight sensation. So, you know, one of the things that I'd love to talk about, again, before we get too much into the backstory, is how did you grow everyone around you to be at such a high level? Because that is so difficult, at least in so many entrepreneurs' minds. They're like, oh, you know, I'm stuck with these team members. You know, no one wants to grow. But you elevate people all the time, people that have been with you for a long time, and you hire up as well. What are some of your big teaching tips there?
So it's all about, like, we all have these limiting beliefs, you know, we all have them, and it's being able to first recognize them in yourself. So constantly, you know, pouring new information into your mind, reading every day, listening to audiobooks every day, going to programs that constantly help you ask yourself better, more empowering questions. And as you understand those questions and come up with the answers, you can help, or I've been able to help my team members see where they're at, ask them those questions, get them to step up and set the expectation. Believe in yourself, believe in them and what they can do, and then they continue to step up to the plate.
What about for those people that resist stuff at first? Because we all know people that have resisted stuff at first, and you're like, oh, here comes another program into the company. How do you help people overcome that? And really, is it about them seeing the vision of the business, or is it just your passion and enthusiasm?
It's meeting them where they're at. So whenever you encounter that resistance to change, which you will, is aligning, you know, to be able to lead and influence somebody, you have to understand what is already influencing them. So if you can kind of step into the mind of the person that you're talking with, align with them, and then try to ask whatever questions is necessary to direct them toward where you want to go, and get it to essentially, you know, them coming to the realization through questions that they answer themselves versus you telling them.
Yeah. So recently you hired a new salesperson. Would you mind walking us through? Because it sounds like, you know, and if you don't mind sharing a little bit about this, but it seemed like, you know, at first the salesperson was performing okay, but you knew they were capable of so much more. How did you get them to see that they were capable of so much more? What was the real nitty gritty specific that worked there?
So with my sales guy, who's really cool, I really appreciate him a lot. The main thing that he has is he's coachable. He's coachable, and from the get-go was always like, man, what do I need to do to get better? So he, you know, went above and beyond, like asking, you know, always asking me, man, do you have any books, you know, and is constantly trying to better himself, constantly asking for feedback. So, I mean, I was definitely willing to work with that, somebody that open-minded, even though, like, this is something I'm still working on for sure is being a better sales coach, because my coaching abilities at the beginning would just be like, okay, no, that's not good, but not, you know, no clear direction of what can be done to fix it. Just
it's not good. You got to read my mind. You figure it out, right?
Yeah, exactly. So luckily, you know, one of the things I'm always seeking out, you know, is coaching for myself, you know, so I can learn, so then I can help the people that I work with.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's do the deep dive here, Rob. You have an incredible story, you know, of heartbreak and pain. Take us back to, I guess it was, you were younger, you were an athlete, you got a back injury, and something happened that should never have happened, but is happening all across the nation these days. So walk us through, you know, the troubled times that you did go through.
So, yeah, I got into, like, I was a fat kid growing up. And I got into my dad got me into like bodybuilding when I was about 11. So I started to do that. That really became a passion of mine. And just I poured myself into that. And that really became my identity. You know, it started to change my body, gave me confidence, put me on a new path. And I had also around that time gotten into drugs a little bit, selling drugs. It was more of like a business type deal. And I ended up injuring my lower back deadlifting. And
so you were about 17 or 18 at this time?
I was probably around 20, 21.
Oh, okay. All right.
20, 21. And so I hurt my back. And I started taking painkillers and had no idea what I was getting myself into. So I didn't know. I really didn't understand addiction. And I just knew, like, I take these and, you know, I feel better. And it quickly, like, got out of control to where, you know, that, like, I couldn't stop. you know, and that led to a whole chain of events that just took my life and, you know, other people down with me, ending up in me falling asleep at a stoplight, waking up to the police pulling me out of my vehicle with drugs and a gun on me.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how out of control.
So you're 21 at this time when that happened.
I think when that happened, yeah, I might have been 22, 23, maybe even 24. It all kind of blurs together.
Yeah. And you had a young daughter at this time?
Yeah. So at the time of my arrest, I had my daughter was just about to turn two.
Got it.
Yeah.
So this happens and you know, we certainly can't say, oh, you know, poor Robbie, you know, wasn't his fault. You mean, you unfortunately made some decisions. You got yourself into the situation.
Yeah.
But then, and you go and you're like, okay, I got to go pay the piper. And you go, and for some strange reason, the way that you described it to me is your lawyer said, hey, listen, first time offense, you had never been arrested before that, right?
Right.
And you go in there and it's sentencing day and you think, okay, the lawyer said first time offense, it's not going to be that bad. Take us through that day. Do you remember the date of it and where you were and just, you know, walk us through it in as much detail as possible, because I think it's super powerful to understand where you were at one point in your life.
Yeah. So February 24th, 2005. So I'm in court for sentencing date. And, you know, like you said, my attorney, he was like, man, it's no big deal. First offense, you'll get some probation. You'll get, you know, something like that. So that's kind of what I was prepared for. And, you know, the judge just didn't see it that way. They gave me a 20-year prison sentence. And in that moment, like, my life changed. You know, like,
what does it feel like? Because nobody listening to this podcast can go, oh yeah, I know that's like, you know, what does it feel like to be hit in, you know, metaphorically hit in the stomach? Like, do your knees drop out of you? Like, what just happens to you physiologically when you hear that?
The moment became real as they began cuffing my hands behind my back and my family started to cry. I could hear my family crying.
So your father's there, your mother's there.
Yeah, my family was there and, you know, they're breaking down and it just like hit me like, this is the reality. Like, this is happening. And in that moment, you know, I made a decision in that moment. It kind of a way I can describe it now for anybody that has heard any of Tim Grover's stuff or read his book is it was like one of those fuck you moments that I was like, all right. You know, this is the situation. This is the reality, but this isn't the end. Like, I'm going to change my life. I'm going to help other people change their lives as well. And I'm going to make every day count. There's not going to be one day that I can look back on and think, why didn't I use this time more efficiently? I looked at it like no other time in my life am I going to have to devote to getting myself better.
Yeah. And so that's one thing that, you know, once you got out, you have a mindset, you know, it's like you've been given a second chance. You have this mindset about meeting people and going to events that is unlike anybody I know. And we will get to that. But, okay, so you get cuffed, you get off, you get processed, you go to prison. Tell us, like, you know, without getting into too much detail or whatever, as much detail as you want, what did the days look like? When do you get your chance to go to the library or whatever it is to immerse yourself in that mindset that I'm going to use every day to get better?
So one of the first things that I started reflecting on, because you have a lot of time that you're just like in your cell.
Okay.
You know, a lot of time. So there's a lot of time to reflect, you know. And so my first thoughts were, you know, what led up to this happening? How can I not do that again? And what do I need to do with my life moving forward? So I knew like that I wanted to do something either with training, because I've always been passionate about that, or some type of counseling, you know, like helping people, because I've always been an influential person, you know, and in that time in my life, especially when drugs entered the picture, I used that in a damaging way, you know, in a way that damaged myself, a way that damaged other people. And I can never change that, you know, but I know moving forward, I can make a difference in the right direction. So, you know, reflecting on like things that like I just couldn't justify because of the mind, like the way your mind works in just like full blown addiction, like you just, you justify things that aren't justifiable.
Sure.
So I made the decision that I was going to, like I said, make every day count. So at first I sought out trying to get into programs. Like in the first facility I was at, they had a drug program and I tried to get into that. They wouldn't let me because I had too many days remaining on my sentence. So instead of using that as an excuse, you know, I started ordering books. I went to the library. I did everything that I could. I spent every day just pouring into my mind, trying to find the answers of, again, you know, why this happened, how can I not do it again? What do I need to do moving forward to make a difference? That.
Let me ask you a quick question.
Sure.
What was the physiological process of, you know, because you were addicted to painkillers and now you were going to prison, and maybe you had gotten off before, but, you know, what was that process like? Because we know that in America right now, this is an epidemic of young men, young women on these painkillers and being addicted. How did you, first of all, overcome the physical addiction?
Well, one thing with that is like, I was on painkillers bad. I mean, at the depths of it, I was on 800 milligrams of Oxycontin a day. And that's a lot.
Got it.
And I had started going to a methadone clinic to be able to get off of the painkiller, because that addiction was costing me $300 a day.
Okay.
And so even though like...
So you did that before you went to prison?
Right. Yeah. So I had gotten, and this was a process like while I was dealing drugs, that happened. And then I got on methadone because that was like a $50 a week clinic quick fix. And they...
Okay.
And they had me, you know, take blood tests and had me on a really high level of methadone, 180 milligrams of methadone a day, which is a lot. And going to counseling through them, they told me that because of the high levels of painkillers and methadone that I was taking, that I would need to stay on it for the rest of my life.
Wow.
Yeah. So whenever I, you know, got locked up, you know, they asked, you know, are you on any medications or anything like that? And I said, yeah, you know, I'm on 180 milligrams of methadone a day. And their response to that was like, okay, well, not anymore. Yeah.
Sorry, you know, it's funny now.
Yeah.
It's funny to you now, but I mean, obviously that's like a scene in a comedy, you know? It was like, no, sorry, bud. So your body had a hard time for the first little bit?
Oh yeah. It was probably, I mean, the first two weeks was pretty bad. And I mean, like, luckily for me, you know, like I went in there, I'm weighing close to 300 pounds and I'm not an easy target, but I didn't feel very good. I didn't feel very good. And it was probably about 6 months until my body started to feel normal again. It took about 6 months of me just getting my mind clear, starting to exercise again, and just my body starting to feel normal.
So you were 300 pounds, and what was your body fat percentage? You were obviously very muscular, but 300 pounds.
Right around that time, like, yeah, when things, like, in my best, like, peak physical condition back when I was younger was probably about 265. Lean, juiced up, everything. But from 300 pounds to where when I got in shape, like just doing body weight stuff, just being focused, mindful, I got down, I was weighing about 235. So I leaned up and was looking good, feeling good. Yeah.
Okay. So another question before we keep going on here is, was the did you have a relationship with the mother of your child going into prison and then she moved on, or was that not really the relationship going in, like you guys really weren't partners, or how was that? And then how was the 7 years with your daughter, you know, not being able to see you?
So the relationship that I had with my daughter's mom, like we were separated, but she was still like coming to see me, bringing my daughter to see me. And during the time before I got locked up, I had cheated on her. She didn't know about it. And then while I was locked up, she found out. And then, so I get a letter one day that was just basically like, hey, I found out, you know, what really happened. I'm never going to bring your daughter to see you again. And I'm never going to talk to you again. You know, if your parents bring her something, that's fine. But, you know, and it was my fault. That was all my fault. But
sure. In
that environment, you know, it's not like you can just go cry to somebody and tell them some kind of information like that. You just had to take it. I had to just take it and push it down and act like nothing happened and go about my day. So all I could do at that point was just write letters. You know, I wrote letters. I wrote to my daughter like every day, even though she's, you know, like three at the time. Like now, like we're all cool, but it wasn't like that then. I mean, understandably, she was very upset with me. And, you know, one of the things that really drove me was thinking about when somebody asked my daughter, what her parents do? You know, her mom's a chemical engineer.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that's what she would say about her mom, but then, you know, what's she going to say about her dad?
Yeah.
So that really drove me every day that I wanted to be somebody that she could be proud of.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that impacted me, that drove me, that gave me that desire to always like overcome whatever. But, you know, through persistence in that, like now, like me and my daughter are cool. Me and the daughter's mom are cool, you know, but that just took a lot of hard work and persistence for me to fix that as much as it could be fixed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I imagine that, you know, you fixed the hardest relationships. Now fixing a relationship with a salesperson, you go, oh, it's going to be no big deal. I mean, I guess in a way, right? It was training for you to become the great leader that you are today. The painful training, but training nonetheless, right?
Well, it's the contrast. You know, like those nights that I would just lay there staring at a spot on the wall of the ceiling and just dreaming about, like, man, I can't wait until I can just get out there and have the opportunity to struggle. You know, barely get by living paycheck to paycheck. Just let me get that. You know, because when you have everything taken away from you, you start looking at things like, I get to do this, not I have to do this. No, you get to do it.
That was one of the most powerful phrases. I'd never heard that until this year, and I've heard it from a couple of sources that it's not, you don't look at your to-do list as, oh, I have to do this. No, I get to do this. And no one's ever said it with as much passion and sincerity as you have, because I mean, nobody means it as much as you do of all the people that I've met. I mean, some people sound like they're making it up, but I mean, man, you really do look at it that way. So let me now ask you, there must have been days where, even with the optimistic mindset that you had, where you may have wanted to just say, can't do it anymore. And when those tiny little thoughts in the back of your head, you know, raise their voices, how did you how did you conquer them? Because people, everybody goes through that. And yeah. how did you go through it at, you know, in one of the worst circumstances? How were you able to do that?
Just always reframing the thought of, okay, where's the lesson here? Where's the lesson here? That this too shall pass. That there will never be anything put on your plate that you are not capable of handling.
Yeah.
So, you know, that this too shall pass. I'm not, I think that's in the Bible or something like that, but that's like, it's just one of the things, like my mom, you know, like was a real, always been like a very stoic figure for me, you okay. know, in like, you know, completing things that she would start, always just, you know, accomplishing things. And it's cool. Like she's actually like, she goes to my gym. She's a member at the gym. She's, you know, in her she's 67 years old and in better shape now than she's ever been. And I worked out with her today, as a matter of fact. So it's pretty cool. But she, you know, she would tell me like, you know, this too shall pass, you know, so it'd be things like that running through my mind. Anytime there was a situation where I really felt overwhelmed, I would just, you know, reframe it, you know, like there's never going to be anything put on my plate that I'm unable to handle. Where's the lesson in this? This too shall pass.
Yeah. So you were getting, were your mom and dad coming and seeing you weekly?
No, like they had me in a place that was a couple hours away from like where I live in the city. So probably like once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was the relationship with your father? Because I know, you know, recently you posted something on Facebook and he had a great response to it. But obviously, you know, parents are going to go through a wave of emotions when it's their, you know, first of all, it's the young man who's being locked away. They're going to miss him and love him. But at the same time, there's probably that sense of, oh, how did this happen sort of thing. So what was the relationship with him? Because I know that from what I described, what you described, I think he was a speaker and a corporate trainer and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of talked off and on and one of the things like, you know, I mentioned the letter thing, like how it was one of those things that hit me and I kind of had to push down. Two other events that happened, and I'll circle around to how this ties in, was my parents, you know, who had been together for, you know, 30 years, they got divorced. So my parents divorced. You know, my mom told me about that while I was locked up. She ended up getting remarried to my stepdad, who, you know, I'm close with him. He comes to the gym now as well. And then my real dad, I found out, like, he told me, like, during a visit one day that he was gay, you know? Yeah. And that just, I mean, just like, it was just like a gut punch. Like, I didn't know how to take it. You know, I didn't know how to deal with it. And so we didn't talk for probably a couple of years after okay. that. And again, it was one of those things that I just had to take, push down, because it's just not information that you can share in that environment. Right. So he and I didn't talk. And I mean, we're cool now. Like, but it was yeah. just like, you know, it was definitely one of the toughest times that I've ever been through. And, you know, it's something like just being open and vulnerable like now is something that I'm still just working on because being in that environment where you have to just be so shut down and closed off, it's just been a process. But yeah, me and my dad didn't talk a whole lot then, you know, on me, but it's better now.
So you're in prison and you have obviously a very regimented schedule. Is there counseling sessions that you go to? Is there open library time that you get? How did it work? Like, what were the things that you were able to use to your advantage during this time in your rehabilitation? Because I think it's very important for everybody listening to understand that there are, and maybe you can talk to, like, how many people were trying hard to rehabilitate themselves for being in there for, I mean, you know, it was a legitimate reason you're in prison, but at the same time, those are, you know, there for the grace of God go a lot of us, you know, so walk us through that.
So, I mean, like I said, when I first got in there, I tried to seek out a drug program, which they wouldn't let me do because I had too many days remaining in my sentence. You know, that was reserved for people who were down to a certain number of days so that they would take that close to them getting out. Right. So I sought out the information from the library, books like self-help mindset type books, and also
What books are available in a prison library?
I mean, the place that I was at, I mean, I can't remember, you know, what books there were exactly. But I would just like, it was just like the process of reading, period. Like, yeah. Because before I went in, like the only thing I ever read was like bodybuilding magazines.
Sure.
That's it. So just being able to get my attention span long enough to where I could read something that wasn't a bodybuilding magazine for more than 10 minutes at a time, you know, that started with fiction type books.
Okay.
Especially like being like before getting processed, you know, when there wasn't a library, there was just whatever was around or whatever, you know, got sent in to you. It started with fiction type books that got me into focused reading times for periods of time. Right. And then
so how much time did you get a day? Were you given half an hour? Were you giving a full hour in the library?
I know, like then it would just, you would grab whatever and you would just take it back to your cell.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's where you spend most of your time is in your cell. So I would have, you know, whatever books with me, and just all my time was either me reading, studying, working out. Like that's it. I would only associate with just a couple people. Other than that, I would just have my like don't talk to me face on to basically make myself unapproachable.
Sure.
And the only people that I did talk with or interact with, it would be like, hey, you know, what's your goal? Like, what are your plans, you know, getting out? Uh-huh. And if somebody didn't have a good answer, like, then I just wouldn't talk to them.
Got it.
Yeah. So
how do you evolve over those 7 years? Is it simply just, this is a formula, you went with it, and you dealt with that? And then in addition to that, when did you start to see that there was a ray of light that, holy crap, I might get out of here before 20, 15, 10 years?
So I started like, you know, I had never done any like body weight working out before. It was just like weights, you know, that's all I knew was weights.
Sure.
So I had to figure out, okay, like how do I create a new training system to where it's just my body weight? You know, they've got some, you know, place where you can do pull-ups, dips, stuff like that.
Okay.
So I started creating workouts for myself and I did my own thing. You know, I set up my routine to where I got my workouts in. I set my body part splits up, how I could still hit all the body parts, you know, with just body weight. And I did my routine, you know, I read, I worked out, and then people would see that. People saw that I did this consistently and people would seek me out. Like, so I ended up, just as a byproduct of me staying focused and doing what I did, I ended up training other people because they would just see that I was consistent and asked like, hey, is it cool? Can I work out with you? Yeah. You know, so I started training people that way. And then, you know, as that went on, you know, I'm helping people get results. And like, I even had like guards ask me to create workout programs for them. Okay. Yeah. That was, I had one time I got called into like the main unit guard tower one day, like they called my name over the loudspeaker. This was when I got into a lower level of security. And they called me in there and it was like a lieutenant that was like, have a seat, you know? And I'm like, man, like what's going on? And he slides over like this notebook and pen to me. And I'm just like really wondering like, where is this going? And he just stays silent. And then finally he's like, okay, like I need you to write me out a workout program. Yeah. So I was just like, but yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm just picturing Shawshank Redemption scenes in my head throughout this entire story. You know, how Andy Dufresne, you know, gets the beer and everything for the guys because he has the accounting skill and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, obviously much different. So you get a bit of, victory that way. But you know, you were sentenced for 20 years. When did you start to think like, hey, it's not going to be 20 years. Like, when do you apply for parole and all that stuff? And when do you get this glimmer of hope?
So the way the process worked is I went from Oklahoma County. I was there for 6 months waiting to get processed, went through processing, which took about 8 days, and then went to prison. The highest level of security that I went to was like a medium / maximum. I was there for 18 months. And then from there,
actual homicide guys in there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like whenever you're in a medium maximum security facility, like each month they put out timesheets. Like, you know, and my timesheet started out with, you know, 7,000 whatever days, you know, is in 20 years. And then there's other people there that get timesheets that just have letters on them, you know, life. So, so there's, you know, a tension in the air in a place like that, because all it takes is a letter, a phone call, a bad day, you know, and something crazy can happen. You know, it's like a lot of nothing happening and then something crazy happening, and you just never know when. So
7,000 days, man. Hey, look at that. 7,000.
Yeah. And the way it works is like with a normal sentence, like mine was a normal sentence. It was a nonviolent sentence. So you get your day for day time plus like there's level, everyone starts on level 2, which means you get 22 extra days a month. And there's level 3, and level 4 is the highest level you can get. So at level 4, you're getting day per day time plus 44 extra days. So basically each month you're getting 70 something days. So that's,
you want to be at that highest level.
Yeah. So that, and then like programs that you do, you can get some credit for those. So like I did Votex, I took college courses, everything I could take to better myself and to get time knocked off of my sentence. Okay. But so I went from medium / maximum security down to a minimum security facility, which I was there for about 3.5 years, and then to a work center.
So what was the difference there? Was it, did you have more time for anything? Did you really notice a difference where you're like, oh my gosh, thank God I'm here sort of thing, as opposed to the,
well, it was different in that, like, there wasn't just like rows and rows of razor wire and multiple gates and things like that, because it's like anybody that was there, like they are going home at some point.
Got it.
You know, so like the tension level is a little bit lower. The freedoms are a little bit more. It was like an open dorm type of living environment versus being in a cell. And
nobody there is really going to screw anything up to the high level.
No, they do.
Never they do.
Yeah. Yeah. They do. It's not as frequent, but still happens. But yeah, there I was able to do, I was able to take college courses there. So that was cool, because the way it worked is if you were taking college courses full time, they would consider that your job. So I was doing like 15, 18 hour semesters and just pouring myself into that, you know, which before I had gotten in trouble, my parents wanted me to go to school and I didn't do well in school because I wasn't into it. But again, with this, you know, different mindset mentality, like, oh man, I get to do this now. I get to do it, you know, completely changed the way I thought about it. And I got all A's for everything and did like 99 hours of college courses through there and just like studied and all that good stuff, man.
And again, I think it's really worth mentioning, like, you're sitting there in those lonely days, those lonely nights, and you're thinking, I can hardly wait till I can get out and struggle paycheck to paycheck, which is, you know, like anybody outside is like, I never want to live paycheck to paycheck, but just to understand the perspective that you had is, man, you give me that chance and I would take that in a heartbeat, right?
Yeah, because it's like, you know, like the way I think about it now is like, if a tornado came and took my gym out tomorrow, I could go get a job at wherever I could just get a job and work my way up into whatever highest position that there was. Like, that's just how I think. Like, I know I could do it. So it's like, you know, every day was like preparing. Like, I know, like once you give me something, like I'm going to take advantage of it and I'm going to be the best at whatever I do.
Got it. So you're down to the minimum. You're doing the college. How often are you having the parole meetings where you go in and they say this, that, or the other thing?
So I went from minimum, I was there for 3.5 years. Then I went to a work center. So I was there for 18 months. And it was while I was at the work center that I came up for parole. I applied for parole. And I had done like everything I could do, you know, taken every program, done everything, you know, like by all accounts, like I would have been like prime candidate for parole. Right. But I got denied. I got denied. And, you know, it was one of those like, you know, momentarily, like it really hurt, you know, because I thought for sure, you know, for sure that I was going to get it. I had worked so hard.
Does anybody get parole the first time they go?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some reason you can't explain, they said no.
Yeah. So from there, I went from that work center to a halfway house, which is actually here in the city, you know, where I live. And
is that where you leave? You have privilege to leave?
You get to leave and work during the day and come back and sleep there at night.
And ankle bracelet sort of thing?
No. They know, like, once you're there, you're down to, like, just a couple years left. So they give you enough rope to hang yourself if that's what you're going to do. Start getting your stuff together or hang yourself, one of the two. So yeah. I had the choice of either working, either taking a welding job, which I had learned how to weld at the work center, or working for a place here in the city called Big Truck Taco. My brother was working. He was the manager for him at the time. So I chose the one that made me the most uncomfortable, which was working for Big Truck Taco, because I knew that, like, I did not have people skills. You know, I had for so long closed myself off and put that demeanor on, like the don't mess with me demeanor. Like, I was very uncomfortable talking to people, and I knew that I had to break out of that if I was going to be a trainer, if I was going to be a counselor, if I was going to do any of those things that I wanted to do. So that process in and of itself, just like knowing that I was going to have to get on a bicycle and ride a bicycle from the work center to work. I mean, just that in and of itself was like crazy overwhelming. Like my brother, I had to have my brother come and pick me up a few times and drive me the route that I would ride my bike on, just so I would know it. And then did that, and then actually took on the window position on the food truck. Just because, I mean, the thought of that was just like terrifying to me, but I did it. I pushed myself to do it until like I overcame it and I got good at it.
Yeah. So then how long were you in that position until you went back for another parole thing? Hopefully. Please tell me they gave you a
so this time. I was there for about 18 months and I actually discharged my 20-year sentence. So I 7 years, 6 months and 18 days with good time and everything like that, discharged that 20.
Oh, wow.
So,
man, you earned 13 years of good behavior.
Yeah. So the day I got out, like, I didn't know I was getting out. that day? Because they, when you're a few months away, like I knew it was a few months, it was coming up, but they send your file up for review and they, you know, make sure like that the right amount of days have been accounted for and everything like that. So the day I got out, I didn't know I was getting out, and they called me into the office and they're just like, "Hey, you're done. You're going home today." And I was just like,
I wonder when you were as surprised as the day you got 20 years, I guess.
Yeah,
maybe,
I was.
Maybe not, but
I mean,
you know, in a way.
I was just like, okay, like, so, like, I should pack my stuff up. They're like, yeah. Okay, so, like, I should call somebody to have them come pick me up. And they're like, yeah. So I can bring my stuff out here and I can take it outside. And they're like, yeah. You know, it's just like, you know, it took a while for it to like really register that it was real.
Wow.
Yeah.
So who'd you call up? Was it your brother or your mom?
Actually, my stepdad. My stepdad, okay. He's retired FBI. He was an international law attorney. And he and my mom got married while I was locked up. And they actually got married in a church, like when I was at the work center, like one of the things we could do was go to church. They got married in the church that I was able to go to so I could be a part of the wedding.
Oh, okay. That's incredible.
Yeah. So he picked me up. I lived with him and my mom for probably about 6 months. He took me to get my license. He really helped me out a lot. So,
and,
yeah.
And so you're on probation for how many years after this?
No, so I had 10 years on paper, 10 years paper time. So, but I also like knew like the day that I got sentenced in court, they told me that I had 2 years supervised at the end of my sentence. So that day that I got out, I was like, okay, who do I need to check in with? And they're like, you're good. I'm like, no. I know what I heard that day. Like they're like, no, you're good. Like, look, your paperwork right here. It shows like you don't have to check in with anybody. You're good. I was like, no. So I went downtown to the courthouse, you know, showed them, asked them. They're like, well, it says like you're good. And I actually went and I found the DA that sentenced me. And I asked her like, hey, you remember me? Like, I know she did.
Okay.
I was like, I know what this says, but I know what you said too. And she's like, your paperwork shows that you're good. She's like, but you know, if you mess up, like I'm going to get you. So I still like to this day, I have
Does she even give you any credit?
Of course not. To this day, I have those papers in my wallet.
Listening to this is like, yeah, that bad day I had yesterday, not so bad after all, man. You know, so that is an incredible story, but that's really just like, I like to say most people's life is a 10 chapter book, and so those are your first six chapters, and now you've gone out and you've written another amazing story. So let's go through, and you know, you're out for, you know, you lived with your father, your parents, your stepfather, and your mother for 6 months. And what happened in that time?
So during that time, you know, I was working for Big Truck Taco, and I had recertified as a personal trainer, got my ACE certification, and I went into the gym that I now have my facility at. It was a 24-hour gym at the time, and I just went in and I kept it real with the owner. I said, "Hey, you know, I'm ACE certified personal trainer." I just got out of prison and I'm looking for somebody to give me an opportunity. And he did.
How were your people skills then? Where did you really get dialed in over those 18 months of Big Truck Taco?
Yeah, they were definitely, they were better.
Good.
You know, and I knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted to be a trainer. I wanted to help people. So I went in there with just that confidence and certainty, like, hey man, like I'm looking for somebody to give me the opportunity. That's all I want. Just give me the opportunity. And so he did. And I started shadowing. I started shadowing some of the trainers there. And I was just like, man, I got this. Like, I got this. So I started working with clients one-on-one there at that facility, and got to the point to where I couldn't take on any more one-on-one clients. And then from there, there was a spot in the building that was the owner of the building's like man cave. It's about a 1500 square foot space. He had his boat and cars and stuff like that in there. And I just had this vision of me like working with people in that area. And I asked him about it, you know, several times, and he, you know, kept telling me no. And I finally talked him into it. He let me in there. And that was the beginning of a just mess. Like, I went from one-on-one training, I could handle it, but now this was starting to turn into an actual business that had a lot more moving parts than I knew how to handle. And I was quickly overwhelmed, way out of my element, took on a partner that I thought had the same vision and goals as me. And that just took me into a dark and tough spot, a place of living in scarcity, of being very uncertain, not knowing what to do. And this cycle lasted for, gosh, I'm a couple of years. Like, this was tough, because like I had two different partnerships during that time. When the first partnership did not work out because I was putting in the work and this person was basically like positioned himself to, okay, well, I'm going to go over here and do this thing now because we're not making any money. But if it works out, then I'm still partner.
Got it.
Right. So that was the first, I ended that, and that was lawsuit number one. And luckily for me, my stepdad, being former international law attorney, knew nothing about partnership agreements and dissolutions, but he knew how to research, and he learned a lot about that, and helped me out during that time.
Yeah.
Then I took on another partner, didn't learn my lesson after the first one. And this person,
why did you take on the second partner?
The second partner was like, I guess you could call it like a sweat equity partner. This was somebody that had been like helping me, you know, when this other thing didn't work out. And I was in such scarcity mindset that when that person exited the picture, that I just locked on to the next person. It was just like, hey, you be my partner. You know, like, just didn't know what the hell I was doing.
And so did you feel like you needed somebody, you couldn't do it on your own?
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yep. I was dependent. I was looking for the answers, you know, in other people.
Yeah.
And, so that person ended up being like super toxic, was just a liar. And it was bad. Was such a good liar and manipulator. Like, I would literally like catch this person red handed in a lie and be like, dude, what the hell? But he was so good that he'd just be like, dude, you're tripping, man. Like, you've blown it way out of proportion. You're tripping to the point where I'd be like, man, am I? Like, am I just?
So this was like a some type of narcissist, or
right?
Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, dude, he got over on me good.
Okay.
And then he ended up like was sleeping with several women, you know, from the gym. And so, you know, they all found out about each other and that all blew up, and he tried to open up another facility and take all my clients, and that didn't work out. And, that was lawsuit number two. And so from there, I finally like got everything in my name and, started working with Bedros.
Right.
That was when I met you and Bedros.
Yeah. So you found Bedros through a YouTube search or something?
Yeah. Yep. Through YouTube search. And that was one of his videos that really impacted me was, you know, where he talked about, you know, like, there are people out there crying themselves to sleep at night because they don't know about the information you have. And that hit me at a time where I was really like feeling sorry for myself. Like, you know, I'm a convicted felon. Like, who am I to share my training information with people? Like, yeah. Really feeling like unworthy. And then hearing that was just basically like, you selfish bastard. You know, yeah. How selfish of you to be thinking about
that.
Yeah,
I use that one a lot because it is so powerful.
Yeah.
Because it's like, me, me, me. No. It's them.
Yeah. So, yeah, that day, like, that I got to meet you and Bedros, because it was just us two and, like, yeah. You know, it's me, Trammy, and, like, me and Trammy had gotten together as my fiance. We had gotten together, you know, through this, and she had actually, you know, chosen to, she was, you know, gotten into medical school, chose not to go to medical school to align with this crazy person from prison that, you know, is
playing that one for parents. Sure, yeah. That was a conversation that would have been great to have been there for.
Oh man, that was a tough one. But it's all cool now. But yeah. That
I'm sorry, I'm laughing at some of these things because they are just so outrageous, right? I mean, like, who could even write a movie like this? And here you are persevering and succeeding, and man, you know, you send these coaching email updates to me every week, and I'm like, what the heck did I do last week? When, you know, here's Rob's attitude about everything and how much you love learning and how you love meeting people. It's like, man, this is inspiring every week, and I thank you for that.
Man, it's mutual, man. Like, that, yeah. The accountability that you provided, like, that's one thing I'm continually on this, like, quest to, like, learn how I learn, you know, yeah. Learn how I learn. And the account, like, that's one thing that I know I need for me to be most effective is for there to be some accountability in yeah. place. Like, that really helped the structure, the guidance, like, that helps me when I know when there's expectations of me.
Right. And that's what you're delivering for your clients too, of course, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when did things start going well for the gym, and what were some of the key ingredients that allowed you to go from, okay, that partnership number two, did you take over the space? Did this guy sell it to you that you were working out?
So I was just renting the space. When I initially got into that space, like, I had a little bit of money saved up that I put in. And then one of the guys, like, my first partner had, like, an investor that put some money in. So that's what started it. And so it was just basically at this time, it was like on a month-to-month lease. And starting to work with Bedros, got in his seven-figure group. And just having some coaching like that's one just huge piece of advice. Like, I would tell to anybody, like, you've got to have coaches.
Yeah.
Like, you had, and at the time, like, you know, the cost for that program was something that I didn't really have, you know, but it was like, okay, like, what I'm doing is not working. So I have to stretch myself and make this commitment, and I'm either going to make something happen with the resources provided or I'm not,
yeah.
You know, but what I'm like burning the boats, what I was doing is not working. I am moving forward. And when you focus on what you have to do to move forward and no longer have the life vest back there, you tend to be a lot more creative and make things happen because you have to.
You know? Were you a CrossFit at the time when we first met?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it was. Yeah, I'm trying to remember if we were, because we had been three, we're on the third name. You know, that's where the twice bitten comes from, right? Because we were like 39th Street and A-Lith. And then, you know, like the second partner, like, tried to get me, like, the CrossFit had, like, accepted my affiliate request and then turned it down. It was like, after further review, you know, we decided we can't work with you. And so I had to, like, through emails and calls to legal to finally get the right person on the phone to to tell them, to break it down, like, hey, here's what happened, here's what's going on, for them to finally like give me permission to have my affiliate. And so throughout that process, that's just where the name came through. Cause like there was actually, there was another, like the person that the second partner was from, used to be in San Antonio. And so I started doing some calling to a place he had been at before that happened to have the same like letters of our facility now, to ask them like, hey, do you know of this person? Can you tell me a little bit about them? And they just went off into like the type of person they were and wanted to sell me their affiliate that had the initials TBC. Yeah. That was like the name. But I found out that you couldn't, like you couldn't make that kind of transfer. And so I've already been thinking about like, what would we make those, like, what would that stand for? And that's where the twice bitten CrossFit.
So now you're the twice bitten CrossFit because you were twice bitten and now you're successful.
Right. Yeah.
Got it. I love it. I love it. Okay. So, so you guys started getting coaching, things started to pick up. Were there any, you know, as we're running out of time here, were there any big, big lessons that you want to share with somebody across industry? It doesn't matter if it's fitness or whatever, you know, some big lessons, you know, get coaching, be very wary about partnerships and, you know, obviously believe in yourself, become a people person. What else was there that allowed you to make the big leaps and bounds that you've been able to make today?
To always be seeking out and surrounding yourself with the best. Whatever it is you want to do, find out like who is doing it at the highest level and be around them in any way that you can, whether that's through their books, through their podcast, through an event, or you getting to actually go and meet that person. They're what, you know, like Tony Robbins, like so many people say, you know, success leaves clues. Yeah. You know, that if you want to be successful, you have to model the formula that people before you have used to be successful. So, and that requires like you to seek out that information for you to follow it.
Yeah. So you went to two Tony events this year. You went to a regular one. Was it Date with Destiny?
I've been to every Tony event. Started off.
And you also did Business Mastery as well, right?
Yeah, I did. Started off with UPW, then did Business Mastery 1, Business Mastery 2, then did Date with Destiny, then did Life and Wealth Mastery, then did Leadership Academy.
Wow. And then you mentioned one time, you were telling me, Craig, this would be really good for you because you were thrown into a group and you were thrown into a group with this really incredible, successful woman and you were like, man, it was uncomfortable talking. I don't know if it was like, you were like a little bit overwhelmed, and but it ended up being a great experience. Was or were you just telling me that I should go and meet beautiful women at Tony Robbins events?
No, it's like it's cool the process that they have you go through with that because like they like me and Trammy went there together, right?
Yeah.
But we couldn't sit together. We had to get the most out of the event. Like you had to like partner up with somebody else.
Got it.
So and then be completely vulnerable with this person and go through all these different drills and exercises where you're going, like this is a 6-day event where you're going from like 8 a.m. until like 2, 3 a.m. So it like, it pushes you like on so many levels, like, cause you know, from the fitness industry, we're used to being pushed, you know, with weights, with resistance, with endurance training, but this is pushing you like psychologically. You know, and so it's you're really being pushed to your limits when you're tired, you're hungry, you know, you've got to engage with this other person and dive deep and go through these exercises and drills that makes it so where it gets it into your nervous system. You know, it makes these changes in your nervous system with a stranger. You know, it's all these things happening at the same time. That was one of the things that really appealed to me about it was it wasn't just, you know, you getting to hear this information, it's you doing the information, you drilling that information into your body, into your nervous system, because, you know, any thoughts or memories you have about specific events in your life, like 9/11 being a good example. That's also the day I got out of prison with 9/11. But, you know, you remember
prison in 9/11, what year?
2012.
Got it.
So, you know, you remember, like everybody remembers where they were because the feeling was so visceral, you know, and anytime you like, you experience things and you have those feelings attached to the experience, you remember it. So one of the things that like Tony uses at his events is tying in so many different emotions to the learning process.
Yeah.
So that way it really ingrains the information into your body. You remember it.
Okay. Got it. So last thing before we wrap up, running out of time here, is what's next for you, man? What is next for you in personal development?
So like I will always be seeking out the empowering questions, you know, of what I need to do to take myself to the next level of development. What skill set is separating me now from the next level of development? What are my blind spots? What is it that I don't see that's going to take me to that next level? What are my beliefs that are so deeply held beliefs that I don't even realize they're beliefs?
Well, that's powerful, and you know, I wish we had a little bit more time. Probably get you back on here because there's so much more to dive into. But this has been so eye opening, and everybody listening is going to be first of all, they're going to be fired up and go, holy crap, I got to go do more with my life. But second of all, there's so much wisdom in what you shared about pushing yourselves and always finding new opportunity that I really, really appreciated. So. Thank you so much, Rob. And so if somebody else is listening to this and they have a podcast and they would love to have you on, how can they get a hold of you?
They can find me probably on Facebook, probably be easiest, either that or Instagram. I'm Rob Gruppe, Gruppe on both of those. So okay. That'd be the easiest way.
People can contact me at support@earlyyourrise.com as well. I'll be happy to make the introduction because this is a story that needs to get out there, and one day it will be a book, right?
That's right.
Awesome, my friend. Awesome.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Thank you so much. Thank you so very much for this. You know, one of the most inspiring conversations I've ever had with anybody, and you've got me thinking about actually doing a Tony event because I've always been too cool for school for a Tony event, but man, you certainly have made me think different.
Date with Destiny or Leadership Academy. Those two right there.
Got it.
Yep.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much, dude.
You bet, man. Talk to you soon.
Now that was the most incredible story of inspiration, dedication, persistence, and perspective that we have ever had on Early to Rise Radio. And it makes you think, what's my excuse again? Oh, yeah. Why am I not succeeding in life? And the reason is nothing. There is nothing holding you back. So let me know if you agree. Was this show helpful? Send me a direct message on Instagram at RealCraigValentine or email me at support@earlytorise.com and let me know what you thought of today's show. Head over to iTunes and give us a review and a 5-star ranking. We'd really love that. And finally, if you are like Rob and you want to double your business and work less, go to the next level, and just change your life, here's what you need to do next. Visit perfectlifeworkshop.com today to apply to work with me at my next coaching event near you or through my brand new phone coaching program. I can't wait to meet you and help you build the perfect business and live the perfect life. Just like Rob, you are unstoppable, and I will see you soon.